Welcome to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Today's Great Conversation is with R.W.R. McDonald. Today, Rob is joining me to discuss his debut novel, The Nancys. I'm Andrew Popel, and every week I broadcast Final Draft from the studios of 2SER in Sydney. We record on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation, and I acknowledge the traditional custodians and their ongoing connection to the land, land that was never ceded. The Final Draft explores the best of Australia's books, writing, and literary culture. The Great Conversations podcast is your chance to hear more of these discussions and get into the books that you love. Now, the Great Conversations podcast is fast approaching its first birthday. In that time, we've put out more than 50 episodes of new books, as well as bonus episodes featuring festivals, awards, publishers, and new podcasts. I'd love to know which show is your favourite, and the way I want you to tell me is by voting with your ears. Go back and give your favourite episode, or episodes, another listen. When our first birthday arrives, and it's only a short while away, I'm going to let you know some of the most loved episodes over our first year. It's a great way to rediscover great Australian writing and share it with others. Now, today on the show, we've got R.W.R. McDonald discussing The Nancys, and The Nancys is the story of Tippi Chan. 11 years old, Tippi lives in the small South Otago town of Riverstone. It's been a shit year for Tippi. Her dad died 9 months ago, and her mum is dealing with it by hiding all trace of his existence. But Tippi's uncle Pike is coming to stay, and together they share a love of Nancy Drew. Tippi has all Pike's old copies and reads them voraciously, wishing she had a mystery to solve. Pike arrives with his new boyfriend Devon, and Tippi's mum leaves for a cruise. And then Tippi's teacher's horribly mutilated body is discovered by the only traffic lights on the way out of town. And together, Tippi, Pike, and Devon must form the Nancys. Join me today and discover the Nancys with R.W.R. McDonald. I am joined on the line now from New Zealand by R.W.R. McDonald. He's a Kiwi in Australia in New Zealand, and we're going to be discussing his debut novel, The Nancys, which before it was even the spectacular pink masterpiece that you can hold in your hands, was highly commended at the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. Welcome, Rob. Welcome to Final Draft.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Now, I want to introduce The Nancys to people because the South Otago town of Riverstone is the sort of place that you leave. And that's what Tippi Chan's Uncle Pike did as soon as he was old enough. Tippi's 11 years old, and the only way she can escape is in the pages of her uncle's beloved Nancy Drew Mysteries. Pike's back, though, with his officially long-term partner, Devon. They're looking after Tippi, but with only two pubs and a shortage of boutiques in Riverstone, there's not much to do. That is, until a body is discovered by the traffic light. And finally, the Nancys have a mystery to solve. I love this. I was immediately excited by the Nancys, Rob. I grew up reading Nancy Drew, the Hardy Boys, the Three Investigators, Encyclopedia Brown. I'm sounding like a really exciting kid, aren't I?
No, that's fantastic.
Now, Nancy Drew, though. Nancy Drew's almost 90 years old.
Yeah.
She's not unproblematic, and she's also something of a Madonna slash the Doctor child of reinvention, going through a slew of guises and iterations from the white bread wholesome to the dark and gritty. How did you want Tippi and Pike and Devon to intersect with this unfolding history?
So the idea for the story first came to me, and it was a snatch of dialogue, and I knew it was a child speaking, and she was talking about investigating a murder. And then that led me to her babysitting uncle and his boyfriend. And from there, I was trying to, well, I guess I was thinking, what would get a child so excited to, you know, do something as kind of dangerous and outrageous as investigating a murder? And then that's when the idea of Nancy Drew came. And the thing I like about Nancy, so in the book, both Tippi and her uncle really love the sort of 1930s Nancy. And as you mentioned, she's been through quite a few iterations. She was quite wild for a time. She was driving around. She had a gun. She was you know, there was no, didn't seem to be any kind of privacy laws when it came to finding out all the details of her father's, who was a lawyer, his cases. And I really love the intergenerational aspect that Nancy Drew affords for these characters. So it turns out that actually Pike's mum had a couple of copies as well. So you've got this fantastic, character that's gone through their family history.
Now, straight away, you establish a bit of a tension between Tippy's precocious interests and what's deemed appropriate for sort of preteen eyes and ears. And then you decapitate a body and ramp it up to 11, and Tippy's kind of thrown further into the mystery. It struck me, though, that as we get older, we forget that as children, we were curious about this darkness and we were interested in these things. Was this important for you to address?
Yeah, it was. When Tippy first came to me, that was in 2006. In 2007, I became a dad to a daughter, and then I had another daughter, 2008. And my kids were born into a time where we had those horrific ISIS beheading videos, terrorism, particularly in countries outside of, countries that were at war. That became the norm. These kids grew up with all of that. They didn't know a time before that. So I wanted to explore that and also I look, my girls are, of course, I'm, their dad, so I'm going to say they're fantastic, but they seem to have very dark, any stories ends up with usually multiple homicides, or the parents die off in the first paragraph, or, I guess even Disney, the parents get it quite early on. So yeah, I think we do forget that they are drawn to that and experience it.
I wonder how that works for us, though, because as you mentioned, like Nancy, she drove, she had a gun. I mean, when I read these when I was a kid, I didn't know any better. I just assumed that's what everyone did in the 30s. And now we have this phenomenon, it's always commented on that Gen X and millennials kind of, maybe refuse to grow up. Do we have a vested interest in keeping children in this sort of utopian idol of childhood, whether or not that's their reality?
Yes, I think so. And I think this is where Pike is so different for Tippy, is because he is not a parent, and he hasn't, but it's not so much that, he just hasn't had that much to do with children. And so he's treating her almost as an adult, and he's not buying into this, cotton wool, or he thinks, and I think he's right, that she's a lot stronger than what her mum, perhaps, who has lost, I don't think it's a spoiler because we say it at the beginning, her father, Tippy's father, died 9 months ago, and her mum has, she's probably more protective of Tippy now because of that loss. So, I think Pike just wants to, her uncle just wants to push her to see, that she is capable. And also, I think, to give Tippy some agency, which she, being overprotected, isn't able to really experience.
Now, a body turns up and Pike, Devon, Tippy form the Nancys. It's their homage to Nancy Drew, and it's also their way of, well, I think for Pike and Devon, it also gives them something to do. For Tippy, it gives her something to keep her occupied. But mysteries have rules, even formulas, and they're always a product of their times. And technology has changed the game. With information and connection, they're always at hand. And I wondered, as I read, did you need to go to a small town that only had one traffic light? Did you need to put Pike and Devon on a digital detox complete with a soap phone substitute? Dear listener, please read the book for that to make sense. Did you need those things to get the right elements in place for this kind of Nancy Drew investigation?
Yes, is the yeah, definitely. Look, they could still be in a small town, but you know, just do it from the living room. And I didn't want that. I wanted to capture some of that or pay homage to, you know, Nancy was out and about all the time. You know, she was driving around or, you know, going to the tea shop or going to Moon Lake. So I really wanted them out of the house. And so I thought one of the ways is to restrict that amount. Now, they do have a tablet, so they do look things up, but I didn't want them out there with a smartphone.
Yeah, I felt like maybe they were on the they were maybe on the National Australian NBN, the way the signal kept freezing. It is a fascinating conundrum, how much technology intersects with a good mystery. And I love the way you balanced it. And also, of course, Tippi is younger. She was never going to drive. So we have almost kind of Stranger Things type scenarios where she has to get around town on a bike, but she's also using those old detective skills of she's counting how long it takes to get anywhere. And you can sort of see how she's exercising her detective brain that she has developed.
And again, I think it goes to wanting her to, so she's, at the beginning, I'd say she's quite numb. There's a lot of internal thoughts. She keeps saying she's okay when people ask how she's doing because of her dad. And then as she gets more, I don't want to say more agency because that comes from within her, but I guess permission to you know, run with it. And, you know, that does have consequences as well. But, yeah, I wanted her to be able to get out and about and to, you know, really this was her, I guess, project and her to be the lead. And as they talk about in the book, it's something she's actually really good at, is solving puzzles and you know, tracking down clues.
There is so much going on, and I feel like I keep discovering new things as I think back on my reading of the book, particularly even doing a bit of research. I wrote a sort of short story around, not on Nancy Drew, but looking at Nancy Drew's history. And I even realized Riverstone, you've kind of got this very sunken homage to Nancy's hometown of River Heights.
Yes. Yeah.
But I want to think about Riverstone and Pike. Pike has this really complicated history with Riverstone. He remembers a town that would never accept him as a gay kid who just wanted to be a hairdresser. But what he encounters on returning is a lot of people who feel really abandoned by him. And it felt like in Barry, the cop, that you were maybe helping Pike replay a little bit of his own story. Can you tell me more about that thread of the novel? Because it's not the mystery, but it's so beautiful and so essential.
Yeah, so I really liked the setting because we see it through three characters' eyes, the three main characters' eyes. So you've got Tippi, who's grown up there, and that's, you know, it's the only place she's ever known. So, and then you've got Pike, who has this baggage and history with it. And then you have Devon, his boyfriend, who's seen it for the first time. So, in a way, Devon's challenging Pike's view of the town. And Pike, I feel, hasn't ever forgiven the town or moved on as much as the town has. So it's noted earlier on, you know, the mayor of the town is, you know, she's queer and she's married, and, you know, the townspeople don't have a problem. I deliberately wanted to write a novel where the small town, you know, you're not having those homophobic taunts or undercurrent, but more so where one of the main characters, it's, I guess, magnifies his own internalized homophobia and feelings that he hasn't dealt with yet. So, yes, definitely with Barry, who's just coming out. I as a choice, just to like I don't want to obviously give away spoilers or anything, but yeah, I think it's important for Pike to go through that journey, and I think it's one that he'll need to continue to go on. One of the other things is, like, I've come back and forth from Australia to New Zealand, and over time, in my experience, you know, I grew up, and as a teenager, everywhere sucks and it's a dump and, you know, all those good things. And then as you get older and you travel and you see other places and you come back, I guess an affinity grows and you start to see the beauty in what you either would have ignored or thought was awful, or yeah, you just didn't realize that actually, you know, there is so much beauty all around us, but we have to be looking for it and okay in ourselves, I think.
Isn't travel brilliant too? I love going to a new place and looking at it through the opposite lens and saying to myself, wow, someone grew up here and thought this was a dump.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is really fun to do in like New York and Paris. You go, well, someone hated this once.
Yeah.
Now, watching all of the characters go through their darkness and then also their light, it strikes me, I haven't focused on the fact this is a genuinely hilarious novel as well. I had to explain to people many times why I was laughing out loud to myself. How did you balance the dark and the light? How did you know where the limits were?
Yeah, look, I really followed the characters on this, and it was, you know, putting them in situations and then just seeing where they went. There was quite a bit that was cut out as well. so there was a Santa parade and there was quite a, yeah, because look, if I let them, they would just basically, you know, talk and rip down curtains and do all kinds of crazy stuff. So it was in the editing that I guess I pared it back. But I also, that sort of dark and light that you mentioned, I think it's necessary. I don't think things are as funny if you haven't had a bit of sadness or hard times as well. And they seem to be so interlinked. I just think, yeah, it's, yeah, I just followed the story, followed the characters. They're kind of quite extreme sometimes. I know it sounds sort of like I'm, you know, a medium sort of channeling, but that's really how it was.
Now, as a none too subtle way of asking for a sequel, I wanted to note that elements like the close-knit population and the spooky abandoned hospital really helped the Nancys to work. We've already talked a little bit about technology restrictions and that sort of thing, but I was wondering, could you ever bring Tippi to Sydney, say, to visit Pike and Devon and have her solve mysteries in the metropolis?
Yes, well, yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I think, yeah, look, I think the three of them have you know, there's plenty more room for each of them to grow individually and also as a group, and definitely access to new toys and tools for sure.
That was playing it close to the chest. I was hoping you'd say, wow, have you been reading the first few chapters of my new manuscript? But I am speaking with R.W.R. McDonald. Now, his debut novel is The Nancys. It is an absolutely glorious, I'm going to call it a romp, but it's also a fantastic mystery, taking us into the world of the Nancys, and it's a beautiful homage also to Nancy Drew. So if you grew up reading mysteries, this is definitely a novel to check out. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time and talking to me about The Nancys.
Thank you so much, Andrew. I'm so pleased you enjoyed it.
I really did. That's it for this great conversation with R.W.R. McDonald. Rob's debut novel is The Nancys, and it's out now through Allen & Unwin. Great Conversations is recorded on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation at 2SER's Broadway Studios in Sydney, Australia. The show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. If you want to keep up with us on the latest in books, writing and literary culture, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Just look for @FinalDraft2SER. Click subscribe in your podcast app too. It's a great way to get a new conversation every week. My name is Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more great conversations from Final Draft. Till then, happy reading.